Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Lovely, beautiful, soulful. Gets us in the mood for the timeless presence here, which is our theme today. No time or space to spirit. You know, it's one of the classic Unity statements we use, no time or space to spirit. But it's hard to get your head around that when you're filled with time and space, you know, when we've got deadlines and commitments, what to leave in, what to leave out, to quote Bob Seger. And the idea that, you know, there's always so much to do, right? There's the week, and then I look forward to TGIF, so I got the weekend, and so on. And then we buy into this thing called old age, sickness, and death, you know, which we all must face, right? Isn't it fun? Old age, sickness, and death, you know, something to look forward to, you know. Everything's falling apart, and eventually we're going to die. Oh, my God. So when we buy into that realm, it's hard to say that there is no time or space to spirit, because it seems very real, this world of conditioning. But we have to remind ourselves that we are more than that. And in fact, time itself is a human construct, right? And we keep reminding ourselves of time, because wherever you go, there's clocks and watches. I'm carrying one right now. I'm wearing one. And as soon as you open your phone, what does it tell you? The time, before anything else, tells you the time. But listen to what Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, said about this. He says, time is the limitation of man's consciousness of space. In other words, we made up time, right? Time is the limitation of man's consciousness or understanding of space. A day is a measure of time in the realm of effects. A sidereal day is that period in which the Earth rotates once around the its axis. Man divided that period into seconds, minutes, hours, and thus invented time. So it's a human invention. We mentioned this last week. Time can be very flexible. It doesn't have to conform to our ideas about it, because it doesn't really exist. Therefore, we have power over it rather than it having power over us. As soon as you give power away to it, what happens? You become limited to a certain view of your life, a view of existence, right? Whereas when you don't buy into it, it's not that you don't have to live by time, but it's no longer your master. You become its master, and it extends. Einstein proved this, didn't he? The space-time continuum. It bends. It's flexible. And we can bend it. We can shape it according to our consciousness. Fillmore goes on to say, the only power in time is what man imparts to it. The only power in time is what man imparts to it. When man gets into the understanding of the absolute, he takes his freedom from all bondage of time and declares that time... I can't understand my home writing. I got it fine at 9:30, now I've lost it. I got to write better, you know, I got to write better. But soon I'll have 10 weeks when I don't have to write this stuff down. He takes his freedom from all bondage of time and declares that time shall no more enter into the substance of his mind, body, and affairs. No more enter into as a leading authority, right? We are putting our authority on spirit, on the limitless possibilities of spirit. Now, when you can do that, what happens, folks? You notice that you have more time, more energy, more wherewithal to do the things you want. Whereas when you're a slave of time, no matter how much you try and create, there's never enough, right? So you can shift the whole thing around by having a different view of what time is. They're powerful words, aren't they? Like I said, in Unity, we use the phrase no time or space to spirit in two ways. We use it in terms of prayer and healing, because what we're saying in prayer, there is no time or space to spirit. Therefore, when someone prays for us, even if they're thousands of miles away, what? It can have an effect, right? So when somebody prays in silent unity for us, it's immediate, right? There is no time or space to spirit. When you pray for someone, however far away they may be, in not just in physical ways, but in consciousness, in their mental ability. You bridge that gap because you are there in spirit, right? So there's that sense of we're all in this together. Yeah, that's the power of prayer, I think, because it doesn't it's not confined to time or space, right? It can be immediate. How long did it take Jesus to heal people generally? Immediately, right? It was done, wasn't it? Because in his consciousness, he lived in this awareness of infinite possibility and timelessness. So therefore, when he declared something to be true, it was true. The only place he couldn't heal was where he grew up, because they didn't see him as the Christ. They saw him as that little snotty-nosed kid. Him, he can't heal me. Well, once you say about somebody they can't heal you, they can't, right? It's not about them, it's about you and your capacity to receive the infinite good. So that's why he said, you know, nobody's accepted my prayers in my own country. And because we're so familiar with that person, we're conditioned by our baggage about that person. But when we are open to and receptive to the newness of something, I'll get to this in a minute, then healing can be immediate. And Jesus knew this. In fact, Jesus didn't heal, did he? Jesus blocked doubt in others so that they could heal themselves. Yeah? It wasn't like he did it all. He simply removed from their consciousness this idea they couldn't for a moment. And they thought, oh my God, I can. And when you got that moment, you can. You do. You achieve, right? And miracles happen. So, and the other way we use the phrase, no time or space of spirit, is when we're counseling through memorial services, funerals, the passing of someone, we affirm that no, there is no time or space for spirit. So our loved ones, the body may have gone, but the spirit of our loved ones has gone nowhere, right? We're all together in this limitless oneness. And so our dearly departed have not departed somewhere. You know, it's like as if they're on a train to glory or whatever. You know, here I go. They haven't really departed. They are still with us, right? And that's the beautiful recognition that we are together in God's great house of life, which is beyond time or space. What do you think Jesus meant when he said in John 8, he said, before Abraham was, I am. That's a powerful statement of timelessness, isn't it? And you know, he was talking to the Jews, and the Jews lifted up Abraham as being their great patriarch, the one who started the whole Jewish nation. So the person they left up as their hero, if you like, that started it all. And Jesus has the temerity to say to him, listen, before Abraham was, I am. They wanted to stone him because they felt that he was taking on the role that was above and beyond him. But see, he wasn't talking about Jesus, was he, when he said, before Abraham was, I am? What was he talking about? The Spirit of God within him, right? Which is also within us. So, before Fred Flintstone, I am. Right? Before all the history that we've created since the Stone Age to now, we are still beautifully free and clear and open. This is the truth. But if we buy into all the baggage of the past, we are weighed down sometimes by it, overwhelmed by it, and limited by it. Listen to what Jesus said in the Gospel of Thomas 18. These are powerful words. The disciples asked Jesus, tell us about our end. When will it be? Well, we're always asking this question, aren't we? Am I going to die? What's going to happen after I die? Is there eternal life? Am I going to the good place or the bad place? You know, is there nothing afterwards? Is it going to be painful? I mean, if you're human, you ask these questions, yes? Just nod and I'll go on. We all ask these questions, yeah. Of course we do. Tell us about our end. What will it be? Well, Jesus doesn't want to go there because he doesn't want to go into that world of relative truth. He doesn't want to go into that world of conditioning. So he refuses to answer them directly. Instead, he's annoying. He says, have you found the beginning so that you now seek the end? And everybody said, oh, thank you, Jesus. That's really helpful. Have you found the beginning? But he uses a big B on that, capital B. Have you found the beginning that you now seek the end? Then he goes on to explain what he means. The place of the beginning will be the place of the end. powerful words, right? What the heck does it mean? Well, it means that in this limitless, timeless place, there is only the beginning. Every moment is a new beginning, right? Before we've made up our minds about something, before we thought another thought that links us back to the past again, that confirms all the things we thought we knew. In that moment of beginningness, we're not thinking at all. We're just experiencing, right? There's no baggage there in that beginning. When we fall in love for the first time again and again, like we do, what happens? We're at the beginning again, aren't we? That's why we love falling in love, I think, because it's like, oh, it's wondrous, right? Unfortunately, it doesn't last, that moment, and then we say, I thought they were the perfect one. I guess they're not.
Never again.
Till the next time. But, you know, what we're going for is this beginningness, this sense of getting too excited here. What we're going for is a sense of being in that moment, right? And we can get it in simple things, looking at the sunset, looking at a beautiful scene. Sometimes the light will change so dramatically. Sometimes looking into somebody's eyes. This morning we had Don Yvonne at the first service, and he was in his joyously irreverent mode. And if you know Don, you'll know what I'm talking about. And he's being annoying to us, but it's fun. And I love it because he was a spiritual teacher to everybody that came in at 9:30. And so those are moments when somebody jerks you out of your complacency and makes you think, right? Isn't that why we like comedians? They do the same thing. They get us out of ourselves so that we can be back at the beginning again. Jesus goes on. He says, blessed, and listen to this because it's practical advice here. Blessed is anyone who will stand up in the beginning and thereby know the end, and never die. Whoa. So, my question is, what does it mean to stand up in the beginning? Stand up in the beginning. And the word stand up is important, isn't it? Because what are we doing? We're choosing to definitely be present. We're not taking a back seat. We're willing to stand up for this. Here I am, right? I'm present. Stand up in the beginning. Beginning of what? Beginning of everything. This moment, the next moment, work, home, whatever it might be. Here I am. Willing to rise up. Right? What? Still I rise. You know, it's rising up into that awareness, isn't it? To stand up in the beginning, therefore know the end. In other words, the end is really not important anymore if you're really present in that moment. It'll take care of itself, right? Not worrying and fretting about it anymore because I'm in the beginning. I've experienced the now, the infinite, the limitless. So, yeah, sure, that stuff will take care of itself, right? I don't have to worry about it. It's what gave Jesus the impetus to do all the things that he did. And Hello. You were at the beginning, aren't you? Yeah. And you're standing up at the beginning. You will know the end, yes you will, but you'll never die. Because the end is really just part of the flow, isn't it? You know, ends and beginnings are endlessly cycling. And so we are beyond death. You will never die. You know, Tibetan masters are great on this. I want to read a couple of passages. And then we're going to ask the question, how is this relevant in my life today? So as we read it, that will be the question we'll ask. All right, first one is, mind is empty, and they talk about the spaciousness as emptiness in Buddhism. Mind is empty, but it does not mean it is. Is it complete nothing? No, it does not. Although the essence is empty, at the same time it is not utter non-existence. It is not comparable to a physical void or vacant space. Mind is not like the horns on the head of a rabbit, a traditional Tibetan example for something that doesn't exist at all. Not just Tibetan, is it? It's Texan as well. Jackalopes. Mind is not a jackalope, folks. There is a luminous or cognizant capacity to mind that is naturally present. I love that. A luminous and cognizant capacity to mind. In other words, a self-reflection. We are able to see who we are, right? That is the great gift. And that's all that the great teachers ask us, the most important question. Who am I? You have to answer that question. Who are you? You are not limited to just your physical body or your moods or your ideas in your mind. You are that infinite possibility that is limitless, right? There is no time or space to this essence that we are. Even though mind is not a concrete entity, still there exists an unobstructed ability to cognize and to experience. The nature of mind is luminous, clear light, meaning that it possesses this ability to see clearly, right? Isn't that amazing? That we have that ability within us, and we shortchange ourselves when we get hooked into all the conditions of our lives, right? I'm not good enough. I don't like them. They're not nice to me. All those things, what does that do? It just degrades us and degrades our environment instead of accepting the fact we are this beautiful, limitless essence of joy. He goes on to say, one may wonder if realizing the absolute truth doesn't make everyday life and ordinary things meaningless. That's a trap for some, you know, want to bliss out into nirvana so I don't have to deal with this stuff, right? But that's a false road, because it's not about getting rid of all your problems. It's about seeing spirit in them, right? In the midst of them, right? They can be our greatest teachers. It does not, he says, it's not meaningless, because when one gains realization into the absolute nature of things, everyday life does not become contradictory in that sense. This is called the realization of the two truths. This means that one studies on the absolute level the way things really are, and on the relative level, one studies the way things take place according to the strict laws of interdependence. But they are one and the same, right? It's the same as when Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God. There's a relative world we live in, but we are not confined to it. That's the essence of the message here. It may exist relatively, but you are not limited to it, because there's this larger absolute that is totally free, and it's always available. The relative world has its relative truth, and the absolute truth also has its truth. If it weren't like that, the absolute truth would be called the truth, and the relative truth would be called lies. But it is called the absolute truth and the relative truth, so it is seeing the way things really are, whether one looks absolutely or whether one considers the ways things seem to manifest. Why is this important? Why is this important, folks? Yes. Gives us a larger perspective on things, so we're no longer in the spin cycle in the washing machine of our lives, right? We realize we're in infinite space. We are not limited. That we can step out at any time from all those things we think define us, or the people around us who think that they define us, and all that nonsense, right? Not about that. It's about freedom. And then finally, now, this is a description of the mind of the Buddhas. And since you are a Buddha and a Christ, and I am too, this is the description of us. So as I read it, don't think of it as, oh, that's nice. Look, Jesus was cool. Look at all the things he had. No, this is us, right? Take this on board. See if you can allow this to be the truth for you today. You are profound and tranquil, free from complexity, uncompounded, luminous clarity. Beyond the mind of conceptual ideas, this is the depth of the mind of the victorious ones. In this, there is not a thing to be removed nor a thing to be added. It is merely the immaculate looking naturally at itself. Can you take that on board today, this week? That you are profound. Oh boy, you're profound, aren't you? Deep. We have depths to us. Yeah? You know, give me some feedback so I know that I'm not just blowing smoke, that this makes sense. Profound. You know, we have depths. If you want to go messing around in the shallows, you can, but you also get depths. You are profound and tranquil. At the core of you is that peacefulness, right? Core of each of us. Free from complexity. Things go crazy when they become too complex. We have a lot to do to get ready for leaving for our sabbatical, both at the church and at home. And I could let my mind go crazy with it, all the details, you know? But when I affirm to myself, it's not complex, I can do this, then it begins to unfold. So the less I buy into the complexity, the better, because I'll tie myself up in knots. Uncompounded, luminous clarity beyond the mind of conceptual ideas, what you thought about before. This is the depth of the mind of the victorious ones who are willing to stand up at the beginning. So let's pick three things we can do this week to remember this truth about who we are, right? Three things. So, go. I got the third one. You only have to come up with two. Be profound. You're going to be very profound, are you? No. But not in that way, right? Be profound. Be willing to go deep with stuff. Is that what you mean?
Be in the here.
Be in the here and now, which is vast and profound and deep. Yes. And be aware of that. And that, apply that to your everyday life. Excellent. That's one. Who's got another one? Keep it simple and enjoy the beauty of it, right? Because that's what it's about. It doesn't have to get all complicated. We can stand up at the beginning where there's no preconditions about anything, where we're simply new. Jesus said that in Revelation, "Behold, I make all things new," because I'm at the beginning. We can be at the beginning again, right? Born again. Isn't that what born again really means? To be at the beginning again. It's not a big deal. It's not when you're perfect or anything like that. It's simply remembering who you are, remembering the truth of your being. Third one is an affirmation that I love, that whenever I use this affirmation, time and energy is given to me miraculously. I don't know how it works. I don't really want to work it out. I just know it's true. Charles Fillmore said this. He said, and I'm going to say it, and then we can say it together, okay? Because believe me, once we affirm it one time, watch out, because something's going to open for you this week as a result of this affirmation. And this is the affirmation. God supplies me with time enough, wisdom enough, strength enough, energy enough to do whatever is before me this day. See, and what are we inviting? Spaciousness. We're inviting the all possibility of God to be present for us in that statement. Let me take it again, and then we'll see if we can all remember it. It's a big task, isn't it? It's long, isn't it? It's a long statement. We can do it. God supplies me with time enough, wisdom enough, strength enough, energy enough to do whatever is before me this day. You want to do it?
Yeah.
All right. God supplies me with time enough, wisdom enough, strength enough, energy enough to do whatever is before me this day. This day. Like I said, watch out. It's going to be a cool week. Amen.
You hear me? Here we go. I'm going to enter our time of meditation, beginning by just relaxing. And roll your shoulders back. Stretch your feet and your toes. Sigh. This is just going to be a moment to explore our spaciousness. Our own vastness, beginning in the middle of your mind, your consciousness like a bud there, opening and realizing, sensing your bones, becoming aware of the warmth of blood in your system, breathing easy, our awareness spreading out easily to encompass more, moving to the surface of your skin and the atmosphere in this room. Allowing the vastness of your consciousness to pick out the corners in the sanctuary, from the smallest corner to the tallest spire in this building, from ground to top, easily encompassing all therein, in this space made sacred by your presence and by your awareness. From here, allow your awareness to roll beyond the building, like morning mist spreading to the neighborhood, covering all the gardens and the people, the shrubs, reaching out even further, encompassing the neighbors, all of Fort Worth, the community of our state. Breathing easy, relaxing, easily encompassing our country in our awareness right now. All the people within, people like us, the people with their own philosophies, no matter what they're doing, no matter who they are, our awareness falling over them like sunshine, encompassing them all, and again spreading to everybody on this planet. Forests, animals, rivers, arguments, pleasures, all of it we enfold in our awareness right now. Breathing easy, relaxed, noticing all, embracing all. This is joy, and so it is.
Thanks for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We sincerely thank you for your contribution, and we affirm with you, divine love, through me, blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive, and I am grateful.